Archaeology can tell us about the past, but what lessons does it have for us in the present day or in the future? As a professional archaeologist, myself, there are many possible answers to this question. The individuals and societies whom we study in prehistory or early history were both similar to and different from ourselves. Where we most certainly share common ground with many early societies, however, is in the challenges posed by human population growth and its environmental impact. Sustainability is a concept with which we are all today familiar. The idea that correct practice, albeit honoured more in the breach than in the observance, is that we should take no more from the environment than can easily be renewed. Our present awareness of the fragility of the environment derives from the large and rapidly growing burden of human population on the world's resources today. Early state societies, early civilizations, that is, in popular parlance, placed similarly great strains on their local environments. Cities comprising tens of thousands of people, all crowded into a relatively restricted area, laid a premium on local productivity. Foodstuffs are essential for life, yet they are bulky to transport, and before modern fuel-powered trucks and railways, cities had to rely mainly on the produce of their local area. This meant intensive agriculture, and cities and states grew up in those settings where agricultural production could support the strain. In the river valleys of the Old World, for example, such as Egypt and Mesopotamia, where flood regimes, irrigation water, and alluvial silt ensured high crop yields. Or in highland South America, where lengthy irrigation canals provided the necessary infrastructure. Or in the tropical lowlands of Mesoamerica, where farming of marshy lowland basins may have been the critical resource. What strikes archaeologists today about these systems is their fragility. An environment well adapted to supporting 100 people per square kilometre may become very vulnerable to both natural and human hazards when population grows to twice or three times that figure. Archaeologists studying early civilizations where collapse has occurred have been able to identify likely causes in many cases. The results of their researches, however, often produce a series of competing explanations. A classic example of this is the Central American Maya, whose jungle-clad ruins provide the archetypal image of a lost civilization. Explanations for the Maya collapse place considerable emphasis on the size of the populations which the farmers were trying to support. Populations may have grown naturally, or growth may have been encouraged by rulers and elites who depended on large populations for construction projects in Maya cities or military campaigns. Over-exploitation of the hill slopes in an attempt to increase yields probably led to soil degradation. Climate change, and there is evidence for a 200-year drought at the crucial period, may also have dramatically reduced the productivity of the lowland Maya wetlands. Or warfare between increasingly competitive Maya cities grouped into two mighty confederacies could simply have placed too great a strain on the system or proved too disruptive for regular food supplies to be maintained. Similar stories emerge elsewhere. The collapse of the Moche civilization in Peru was precipitated by a long 6th century drought. But the root cause was the size of the population to be supported by complex irrigation systems in an essentially desert environment. Once again, population size led to fragility and vulnerability. In other cases, however, early societies proved able to manage and to limit the effect of their own development. Thus, salination, caused by over-irrigation, was early recognized as a problem in lowland Mesopotamia, but it did not lead to social collapse. Many Mesopotamian cities were continuously occupied for several thousand years, nor should we forget that many early city-states in the Near East or the Mediterranean, in places such as Athens or Jerusalem, are still occupied at the present day, so collapse was by no means the invariable outcome. It nonetheless appears to be the case that in fragile environmental settings, human ability to offset catastrophe is often limited. We should not imagine that early societies were unaware of their problems. They must have observed the soil eroding from the hillsides or the salt crusts forming on their fields. In some cases, there may have been a failure of resolve, an inability to organize and marshal support for effective remedial action. In other cases, environmental factors may simply have been too powerful for the technology of the time to cope. But the same questions underlay these processes as underlay those facing societies at the present day. Are we convinced by the evidence claimed for current environmental degradation and the practicality or fairness of proposed countermeasures? Is the impending crisis simply too far in the future to become a pressing priority here and now? The length of the human lifespan may itself make it difficult for people to look more than 20 or 30 years ahead, yet the processes set in motion by human population growth, either locally or globally, may require early effective action if they are successfully to be confronted. The study of early state societies illustrates the kinds of questions and the kinds of options, in terms of problems, responses, and outcomes, which place current concerns about greenhouse gases, CFCs, and genetically modified crops within the broadest historical context.